Hey guys, it's your boy Vinny B from Raider Nation Radio in the huddle. Guys, I've been talking for months now about TAT, an affordable quality CBD cigarette. Well, good news, all TAT products are now available at all Speedy Marts across Las Vegas. That's right, TAT products, all of them, are now available at all Speedy Marts across Las Vegas.
Broadcasting live from the RNR studios in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, presented by Tequila Embajador.
What's good, Raider Nation? Welcome back to Raider Nation Radio, 9:20 a.m. on a Monday. We're talking schedule. We're talking, I don't know, James Bradbury to the Raiders, potentially. We know Kenny Young has signed with the Raiders. Lots going on. The James Bradbury thing is something to keep an eye on, although it might require Mr. Bradbury to have a little bit of patience, just a little bit of patience until June 2nd when $20 million comes off the Raiders' books, and they will be in a much better position to sign him. We'll keep track of that, of course. We're going to go out to the Raider Nation guest line. Welcome in a good friend of mine from Southern California, Adam Rank. You know him from NFL Network. He was kind enough and gracious enough to join us in the huddle today. Adam, how are you doing, my friend?
Vinny, what's going on? So wonderful to hear your voice. I miss that. Like, obviously, I get to, you know, see your writing and see you on Twitter and everything, but not hearing your voice, you know, when you would be, can I say 570?
Yes, absolutely.
I don't know if that's allowed.
It is. We're going to make it. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I miss our times. We worked together a few times. It was always a pleasure working with Adam. And I got to start off right here, Adam Rank. I'm a Met fan. All right. I'm just going to throw it out there. I know that you are a devout, your beloved Angels. I called them the California Angels, by the way, going into break. And even my 20-something-year-old producer said, dude, they're not the California Angels anymore. I go, I know, but that's what I grew up on, and I still love to say the California Angels. Anyway, Adam, I don't know if you know the history-making moment we live in right now. And it took my 17-year-old son to point it out the other day. Do you know what history is being created right now?
Is it the four teams on the coast?
Yes.
Occupying first place?
Yes. For the first time ever, the Dodgers, the Angels, the Mets, and the Yankees all lead their division, are all in first place. I want to freeze this moment in time, Adam, because this is as it should be. And I would love to see how far we could take it. I'm going to ask you, because I know you're an Angel fan, and I love to see the Angels having success. Here in Las Vegas, by the way, we get all the stations on DirecTV. We get the Dodgers, the Angels, all of that, because we're basically a neighbor of Los Angeles and Southern California.
Of course.
Can the Angels hold on here and win their division?
Well, I think they have one of the more difficult challenges because Houston's in the division, although I do know the Dodgers did not win their division last year, even though they won like 105 games,
right,
or something like that. I will say, though, the one thing that's impressed me with the Angels, in addition to the late-inning heroics we've seen over the last week, two rallies at Boston, a building that I hate, that they never do very well in, rally to win those games, rally to win on Sunday, on a game like, I don't know why they're having trouble with the Nationals, but I do really like the way that this team is constructed. And I think that one of the biggest that Perry did, the general manager, was go out and really fortify the bullpen. And to me, in this era of baseball where starters don't go very long and things like that, I think having a solid back-end bullpen, a shutdown closer, makes all the difference in the world. So I really do expect the Angels to be there. Will they hold off Houston for the divisional title? I don't know. But I think with, you know, the wild card and everything being as it is, I think the Angels are going to be right there at the end.
Well, and the Angels have always been my American League team, so I could feel good about Noah Syndergaard leaving my Mets to go play for the Angels, and he's just such a delight to watch and a great character. I think he's fitting right in California and Southern California, so I'm wishing the best for Noah Syndergaard.
Awesome.
Absolutely, no question. Good to see him healthy.
And I will tell you this, too, is anytime I'm in New York and I need to catch a baseball game, I only go to Citi Field.
It's a beautiful park.
It's amazing. I just wish that there was more around it.
Yes.
Like when you get off the train, you're like, what is happening? Like why? There's like some chop shops and that's it. Like, well, you would think like if they could build like a bar district there, it'd be amazing.
There is a plan in place for that, but you know how difficult it is in states like California and New York to get things done. But Willets Point, which is right outside Citi Field, is quote unquote under development, and it'll be coming sometime in 2040, I would think, is when that project is going to get complete. But yes, that is coming, hopefully. All right, Adam Rank, this is a big week for the NFL. The schedule comes out on Thursday, and I was talking earlier on the show how big of a phenomenon that's become. And I'm trying to kind of put my finger on why it's so popular. But the one thing that I keep coming back to is when I was a kid, when you were a kid, the thought of traveling to go see your favorite team outside of the city that you live in, it wasn't really feasible necessarily. You had to figure out ways to buy tickets. And, you know, that was hard. That was could be you could land in jail sometimes going away to try to, you know, buy tickets from somebody. Now things are so much easier. Travel's easier. Being able to book your ticket or get your tickets online, book your hotels, all of those things kind of come into play. And what I've noticed from fans is that they literally wait or can't wait to find out what the schedule is going to look like so they can make plans, whether they're flying in to go see their team at home or on the road. Are you picking up on kind of the same thing?
100%. And I think having a team in Las Vegas is a huge help for that, because anytime that you have a team that doesn't normally play the Raiders, I'd say anybody outside of the AFC West, that's a big thing. Like, I remember last year, the Bears, you know, were going to play in Las Vegas. And I'm, when is this, you know, that was a big thing. Like, when is this game? I want to find out. And I want to, you know, I made sure my sister was able to go out and see that game and everything like that. And I think people do plan vacations around that. Everybody wants to go out and see these different stadiums, get a different look at some other, you know, some other ways the teams celebrate, the teams tailgate and all that good stuff. Like, I would love to go see, weirdly, I would love to go see a game in Jacksonville. I'm really like fat. I just want to go to Jacksonville.
Oh boy!
It's on the coast. It's on the Atlantic. They got TPC Sawgrass. I'm assuming, I don't know how hard it is to get onto that golf course, but I'm like, you know what? Where I could go to a beach bar and spend $3 for a Coors Light or whatever. Go play TPC Sawgrass and then go see an NFL game. I'm into that. There was no shade. I know you were bracing yourself. Like, there was going to be some Jacksonville joke. No, this is in all sincerity.
Well,
I think Jacksonville would be fun.
Okay, and the Raiders go to Jacksonville this year, so I'll be there. I have to say this, Adam. Of all the places that I've gone, every time I'm in Jacksonville, to be honest with you, and nothing against Jacksonville and the fine people of Jacksonville, but sometimes I'm driving around, and I think you would get a similar answer from a lot of people who cover the NFL. About 5-10 minutes into the ride from the airport to your hotel, you're kind of thinking to yourself, how is there an NFL team here? It's but you have to see it to kind of appreciate even that end of it. So, I would say definitely, go check out a game in Jacksonville. It is kind of a unique situation, that stadium. That's where, you know, Florida plays Georgia. That's a very historic place and venue. You're definitely in SEC country and you feel that. So, it is an interesting, outpost, in the NFL. But when you're talking about, like, your family came to the Bears game here against the Raiders, there were a lot of Bears fans here that weekend. They definitely represented. Should we look at that? Because it happens in Los Angeles. It happens now a lot of places. And I almost think it's more of a compliment than a put down. I know a lot of people want to take it the negative way, like, how could you let that happen? You let another team's fan base come into your stadium. But it's actually a compliment, because wherever that stadium is, here in Las Vegas, in Los Angeles, people want to go and see their team play. That's not a bad thing. It's a compliment.
No, that's what you should want. You should want to live in a desirable place where you see fans of the other team come in there. And I think that the NFL is just kind of built itself up that way, because I'll tell you, like, there's times we'll be watching a Cowboys game and you'll hear 49er fans or opposing fans making a little bit of noise. And I think that it's just the way that the NFL is built now, that it's such an event that it's almost like having 17 weeks now, but there's like close to 300 mini Super Bowls, and people want to make these trips out and go see these places. Like, New Orleans is another one. Like, it is a great example. Like, what a great town go to. Miami, very desirable. Like, the NFL is in a lot of desirable cities. Seattle, like, going and experiencing the atmosphere there. And if I'm being pretty honest with you, there's not a lot of places I wouldn't want to go. I wouldn't want to go to Green Bay just on general principle as a Bears fan.
I was going to say, that is a great place to go watch a football game, though, I have to say.
I'm sure that it is. Steve Mariucci was trying to sell me on it one time, and I'm like, no, dude, I'm not going. And the fact that you're so insistent on it makes me get my contrarianness up, and I'm going to dig in my heels even further, and I'm never going to go.
All right, Adam, I'm going to make this prediction right now, because one day you're going to go, all right? You're going to go. You're going to – it's you just have to, okay? And I'm going to tell you this right now, and you're going to remember me telling you this. If you ever get out to Lambeau Field, you're going to – first of all, it's going to take your breath away. It is truly the most magical place to watch an NFL game. I mean that sincerely. And you're going to go, wow, this is the Mecca right here. And you're going to feel it and you're going to understand it. Even as a Bears fan, and I get it and I understand that, but that's the reaction that you're going to have, because everybody does. Even a contrarian like you is going to feel that phenomena. That's my prediction. So, and I can't wait for you to get out there, and I'll follow your tweets when you say, wow, Vinny was right. This is the Mecca of football. It really is a special place. We're talking to Adam Rank. You can follow him. I'm telling you, man. I didn't think I was going to.
Go ahead. Oh, my gosh. People are acting like it's Wrigley Field or Fenway Park.
It's better.
Or something. Like, come on.
It's better. It's better. It's
you
beautiful.
You cover football. You're biased.
I'm not. And I do love Wrigley without question. That's my favorite baseball stadium. So I'm with you on that end of it. You could follow Adam at Adam Rank. All right. So. Of the games that we're going to find out, and we're going to get some teases here pretty soon. Anything in particular, any game in particular that just sort of jumps out at you that you want to be at or can't wait to see and figure out where it's going to be?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. The leaks coming out, like they're not the leaks, but it's also like they're slow rolling the announcement.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's so funny that you mentioned it's become a thing. Like they're releasing this game. Cause like, I'll be honest. I'll pull the curtain back. I'd probably even get in trouble for saying this, but like, they stumbled upon this, like how much interest, like the NFL is very good about this, like gauging, like people are really interested in this. Like it was, I remember years ago, like when free agency started being like a thing that
right.
everybody locked in on. And it was like, not that it challenges March Madness, but it's like, I had to be careful of requesting time off for March Madness because like, well, it's free agency. And now the schedule release is such a huge ordeal. And then Joe Buck and, Troy Aikman were on Good Morning Football this week. Like it's crazy. Like it's just so much fun, but it's crazy. And it's, you know, that's how I make money. You know, I make money from the NFL. So I'm like, okay, keep doing it. People,
exactly. We've had meetings. We've had meetings with the Las Vegas Review Journal. We've had literally one this morning about the schedule release. So there you go.
It's amazing. And you know what? And for good reason, you know, people are excited about this and why not? We saw a bunch of people in town for the draft last week. So I do look at this, though, and I'm curious. I always want to know, and I don't know if they released it. I'm so far behind. I'm so involved with the Angels right now. I shouldn't admit this, but I'm like, yeah, I kind of got like James. You were talking about James Bradberry. I'm like, oh, that's right. He was released.
Yes.
I'm worried about Taylor Ward's injury. Like, that's,
right.
That's where my head's at right now. It's minor. He's expected to play tomorrow. He'll be fine. But it's one of those things that, you know, I do know, like, the kickoff game will be fun. It's the Rams. It's going to be at SoFi Stadium. For people who don't know, the NFL Network, our offices are right there. So everything for kickoff is going to be right there. So that's really the thing, selfishly, is what I'm looking forward to the most, because, like, that is going to be an event. Like, we're all going to be there. It's going to be a thing. Like, well, I'm assuming I'm going to be on the Fantasy Show again this year, or Total Access, or, well, I'll be on some show. Be doing something, you know, out by the lake and reporting. And so I really can't wait. I'm like so excited. I know, I think they play the Cowboys this year. So everybody's kind of in, I don't know. And like, I'll be honest, you're not going to get it out of me, but I am privy. I have not seen the schedule, but I usually get it a little bit ahead of time. I don't want to know. I don't want to know who the Rams play. I don't want to know any of this information because I want to be surprised. I want to be like everybody else.
There you
go.
I
don't want spoilers. Like, I haven't watched Ozark yet. Like, I want to watch it and enjoy it. But it's one of those things. I think the Rams is a big one. And then Kansas City, Buffalo. I'm confident they play again. Oh, and then wherever Seattle and Denver hook up. Like, a lot of that stuff is going to be amazing. There's, like, more revenge games this season than I think that we've ever had. So I'm really looking forward to seeing where all those fall out.
Have they named the lake in at SoFi Stadium yet? Have they come up with an actual
no.
like the Lake of Inglewood or nothing? Nothing.
That's a great point. No, they have not named it like Anthony Kiedis Lake or something. I don't know. I don't know which way you would go with that.
Chick Hearn Lake.
How do we feel about Chick Hearn now? I didn't know that. Ever since I've been watching Winning Time,
oh, no.
I'm like, oh, is this ruining Chick Hearn? I mean, I know it's an exaggeration, but it's like, oh, like, okay. But Chick is still like, I think Chick Hearn would be an appropriate one to name that lake after.
As exaggerated as Winning Time is, and it is, Chick, we did used to call Chick the Teflon Man back in the day because he was known to, you know, say certain things and just, but it never stuck to him because he was so beloved. So, but yeah, he's sort of coming, as a lot of people are, they're kind of coming back to life, right or wrong, in Winning Time. I know Jerry West isn't happy about it, but I think last night was the last episode. It's been picked up for season two, so you could go on and on with the Lakers. So, it's that could go on forever. That show could go on forever. All right, Adam Rank, the AFC, you just mentioned the Broncos and, you know, potentially playing the Seattle Seahawks, the Russell Wilson game here in the AFC West between the Raiders, the Broncos, and the Chargers. Obviously, they've all gotten better. I'm not so sure where the Kansas City Chiefs are in terms of moving forward or moving back. We'll have to see without Tyreek Hill. But how crazy has it been for you, Adam Rank, over at the NFL Network, to kind of chart what's been going on with this AFC West?
It's been incredible. Like, it's just been an arms race like you haven't seen in quite some time. It does act, you know, going back to the NBA example, it's kind of like the super teams that you see sometimes in the NBA where everybody wants to go play with their friends and everything like that, which I'm actually kind of for.
Yes. Like,
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's kind of, especially, yeah, of course the Raiders guy is going to be like, this is great. Yeah, of course. You have a likable quarterback that people want to play with, as opposed to the other guy. So, of course, it worked out well for you. And it is interesting. But it's fun to see this work out. And I think that, you know, of all the moves, and I know, I don't know why. I do know why, because people are terrible. But people just seem to be still sleeping on the Raiders. I'm like, do you not understand, like, Devontae Adams is a good player. Like, Derek Carr is a good quarterback. He has not had a player like Devontae Adams since his time at Fresno State. This is going to be a big deal. I think this Raiders team is so good, and everybody still wants to sleep on them. And you're like, okay, I know the Chargers went out and made some moves, and it's great. They got Khalil Mack, which would have been amazing 4 years ago. And they, you know, J.C. Jackson's fine. But, you know, I remember Malcolm Butler going to Tennessee and not doing anything. So it's all cute. I love that the Chargers made a bunch of moves. Like, God bless them. But I think what the Raiders did, like, that's far and above. Like, They got an all-star, a guy who's considered the best at his position in his prime, to come play with his best friend on an exciting team that's ascending. I think that's it still amazes me. That is not talked about enough.
Well, and to take that a step further, he's also going to be playing alongside a guy that I think is also gets underrated a little bit, Darren Waller. I mean, when you are a defense having to decide who to defend, knowing full well that if you do make a choice between those two, the other guy is liable to kill you. I'm hard pressed to find a better tandem than that. I mean, it's all on paper. We get that, but that's a pretty darn good tandem. And then you bring in Hunter Renfrow and Josh Jacobs. This is an offense that has a chance to be pretty special.
Absolutely. And that's a great point about Darren Waller. I know that, people, you know, the fantasy influence on people are like, well, I can't take him now. I'm like, actually, he might not get the yardage totals that he used to get. He might not. But I think where he's really going to make his hay is near the red zone, like near the goal line. Like, that is such a valuable piece to the offense, and he does such a great job with it. So I love this Raiders offense. I think they're going to be so good. It's going to be so exciting. And again, let them sleep. You know, people act like Tyreek Hill leaving Kansas City is no big deal, and they act like Khalil Mack is, you know, everything that, you know, suddenly it's Khalil Mack of 2018, apparently. I missed that memo. But you know what? I think that the Raiders did such a good job. But it's going to be fun, and it's going to be in Denver. Yeah, Denver. Denver actually made good moves, too. Like that, I mean, going from Drew Lock to Russell Wilson, that's a little bit of an upgrade. You know what I'm saying?
Just a little bit. I think
that's like if Chumbawamba signed on for a residency at Resorts World and they got bumped for the Killers. You're like, oh, we upgraded. Like,
yes.
We did okay. Like, that is an upgrade there.
No doubt about it. All right. Last question for you, Adam. And I want that fantasy. Oh, wait. I got my producer, Damon Cotton, has a question. Go ahead, Damon.
Yeah, Adam, I'm just looking at the Angels here, and Shohei Ohtani, his batting average isn't what it was last season, but do you still think that he could maybe repeat being MVP?
You know, it's going to be Taylor Ward, so no, I don't think that it can. No, I mean,
which is a good thing.
But Taylor Ward, yeah, because he's having a phenomenal season. Do you think he's been the difference for the team this year?
Yeah, Taylor Ward getting that job right out of spring training, it was a surprise when Justin Upton was released, and a lot of people thought they were going to try to put Joe Adele up there, who's been a prize prospect for a number of years. But Taylor Ward ended up winning the job, and he's really rewarded the faith of Joe Maddon. And I think what it is, I think what we see with the Angels, I think Shohei has been great. Obviously, he had the game-tying double yesterday that set up, and he scored the winning run when Rendon drove him in. The offense now, the cool part, not the cool part, I don't want to say this in a I don't want to take anything away from Trout, but it's like Trout struck out in the ninth inning. The last 3 years, that would have been the end of the game.
Yep.
Like nothing's happening. Like the game's over. But Trout was the guy who did not come through in the ninth. And that's not a shot at him. He's been playing excellent this year. But it just shows you that, you know what, there's other guys in this lineup that can come through. Ohtani rips the double. Rendon drives him in, and Rendon hasn't been playing great. He's still recovering from hip surgery. So when Rendon starts hitting a little bit more, when Walsh starts showing a little bit more consistency, although he's a great player, once it gets past the eighth inning, the guy's one of the best in the game. And Marsh, you know, gets a little bit more consistency. This Angels team can actually be better. And I don't think that it's going to lend itself to Ohtani being the MVP again, although if he keeps pitching the way that he does, and if he gets the batting average close to what it was last year, maybe not, because he didn't have a higher batting average last year, but he's driving in the runs and shutting down people on the mound like he is, he's definitely going to be in the race again.
It's a beautiful thing to see, and to me, the Subway Series this year and the Freeway Series this year are going to be spectacular. But before I let you go, Adam, I need you to put the fantasy hat on for 1 second, because you mentioned Tyreek Hill, and I've been trying to gauge what this might mean, training Tyreek Hill. I get why they felt like they needed to do it, at this stage, the salary, all that good stuff. But the impact that it's going to have on their offense, and it's I don't think people are really wrapping their head correctly around how big of a loss that is. But you are into those types of numbers. How big of a loss is that?
No, I think that's significant. I mean, Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill kind of worked in tandem. And they kind of fed off each other. And I know that if you want to take a small sample size of what Patrick Mahomes has been able to do without Tyreek Hill, he stepped up in those games. But, you know, I think, too, and they also lost Byron Pringle, who is their number three receiver. And they're trying to replace him with Juju, who needs to bounce back in a big way. They brought in Sky Moore. They got MVS. It's still not the same. Like, there is something about having Tyreek Hill and his presence on the field that changes so much. Now, it might mean that they have to run the ball a little bit more. It could mean that Patrick Mahomes isn't as reckless and doesn't try to force the issue as much as he was last year. But I still think that when you have a player like Tyreek Hill, it changes so much of what you're able to do. And as much as I like Juju and everything like that, like he's a possession receiver. Like, he's a good player. He's not Tyreek Hill, who is a definite difference maker. And I think that hurts the Chiefs this season. I think that, you know, especially in a division where everybody got better and the margin for error is going to be so razor thin, hurting yourself like that is going to be significant. And it's not going to shock me if the other three teams finish above them.
Wow, that is I'm with you.
I'm not predicting it. I'm not predicting it. I'm just saying it wouldn't shock me. I gave myself some wiggle room there, but still, I mean, that's a great division. Like, being fourth in the AFC West is probably like being first or second in some other division.
No question
about
it.
Like, those But those teams are good. Like, everybody's good. There's no pushover in that division.
That fourth place team could still win 9, 10, 11 games. You don't know. That's how nutty it's going to be. So we can't wait, and we can't wait till Thursday to figure out who plays who and when. Adam Rank, it was a pleasure talking to you and hearing your voice, my friend. Truly appreciate you coming on, spending some time with us in the huddle. You have a standing offer whenever you want to come on to come back in. I really appreciate it, Adam.
Vinny, whenever I have a Vegas take just itching to, I wish I'd come on sooner because I wanted to come and support this Raiders team as much as possible. But yes, I will hopefully be back on again very soon and keep doing the excellent work that you do. It's been a pleasure watching you take hold out there in Las Vegas. So keep it up, man.
I really appreciate that. And right back at you, Adam Rank. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you.
You got it. That was Adam Rank from the NFL Network. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM on a Monday.
You're listening to Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM. Now, back to your host, Vinny Bonsignore.
Our thanks again to Adam Rank from the NFL Network. Always great to talk to him and reconnect with him. A great talent, too. A very funny man as well. I think everybody understands that watching him on NFL Network. We're going to go back out to the Raider Nation guest line and welcome in another friend of the show, Dan Dugan from The Athletic. He covers the New York Giants for The Athletic. And big news on that side of America with the Giants officially releasing James Bradberry. It was imminent, so everyone knew it was coming, and it wasn't a talent issue. It was a money issue. We're going to get all into it. Dan, thanks for spending some time with us in the huddle. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing good, and we're going to obviously talk about James Bradberry. And were you surprised? Let's start here. Were you surprised that there wasn't a trade market for James Bradberry? 28, going to be 29 in June, I think it is, playing at a pretty high level, of definitely a credible NFL viable cornerback. The Giants not being able to find a trade partner with him, did that surprise you at all?
On the surface, it did. Like, when I talked to people at the combine when this first started to, you know, kind of percolate, you know, people were saying, oh, he's like a, you know, you can get a third round pick back for him. But I think at the point, at that point, we're really taking two things into consideration. Other teams were aware of how dire the Giants situation was cap wise. So they knew that eventually this day was going to come. But at the same time, you know, teams can't just wait back because someone could beat to the punch. I think the bigger problem was he had 1 year left on his deal at $13.5 million. So, I mean, he's a good player, and he had a great year in 2020, kind of took a step back last year. But I think for teams that have to give up draft capital to take on that as a one-year rental, that was the part that was really unappealing. So I think that's why, in the end, it was tough to get a deal done. I mean, they did have a deal in place with the Texans, and so then the Texans were trying to negotiate with Bradberry to, you know, lower his cap number, and they just couldn't get on the same page there because James Bradberry is not going to agree to a longer-term pay cut to go to play for the Texans. That just obviously doesn't make any sense from his perspective. So that was sort of where they were at. It never really got too serious because I think that $13.5 million figure just scared teams off. They figured the Giants have to cut them, so now that's where we are, and now teams can get creative with how they structure the contract and bid for him, you know, kind of on the open market.
So James Bradberry is officially a free agent, doesn't have to go through waivers or anything like that. He starts from scratch in terms of the contract, which wasn't guaranteed through the Giants. So he's at zero and is able to now negotiate a new contract. And I'm sure from his perspective, while he's not going to make the $13 million he was scheduled to make this year, maybe in terms of years and guaranteed money, he might come off better off being able to now negotiate with 31 other teams. What do you think a contract for him might look like? Or do you think he just goes a one-year deal and then remarkets himself next year?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's funny because from the Giants' perspective, I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about his market so much because you knew it wasn't going to be here.
Right.
But no, I mean, you know, obviously as this became, you know, a likely outcome, I was trying to figure it out. I mean, I think if you look, you always have to look at, you know, comparable players, right? So if they cut him in March when everyone was flush with cash, you saw Darius Williams got 3 years, $30 million from Jacksonville. Then a couple weeks before the draft, you saw Stephon Gilmore get 2 years, $20 million. Those are guys in sort of his age demographic, you know, comparable players. I know Gilmore's ceiling was a lot higher, but, you know, he's certainly on the decline. So I think a $10 million annual range would have been realistic. I don't think, you know, he got about 13 and a half when he signed with the Giants, you know, 2 years ago. he's not going to get that. But now at this stage, I mean, he's certainly not going to get, 13.5, from anyone this year. I think that's, as we discussed, that was what turned teams off as far as a trade. But I think what makes the most sense for him, because at this point in the game, money is kind of dried up. You take a one-year deal. You try, obviously, to get as much as you can, but you're also trying to find the best fit. Like, he's only been on one playoff team in six seasons. So go to a contender that, I think the team that a lot of Giants fans are afraid of that's looming is the Eagles, because Howie Roseman will get creative with this thing. It'll be a deal that's like 1 year, $10 million, but it counts like two on the cap, because, he'll put void years, everything like that. So I think that's what he's looking at, is like maybe in like a $7 to $10 million range, maybe some incentives to get it to 10. But it's a one-year deal that allows him now next offseason to hit free agency, right when all the money is out there, the cap's going to go up, all that good stuff. So I think that's where he's at. I don't think he's at a position now where he's looking to lock in somewhere 2 or 3 years, because I just don't think the market will be kind to him if that's what he's seeking.
There's a team here in Las Vegas by the name of the Raiders. Their defensive coordinator, Patrick Graham, was James's defensive coordinator the last 2 years, one of which, 2020, was one of James Bradbury's best years. Made the Pro Bowl, had a lot of interceptions, played well. Was a great, really good player for the Giants that particular year. Do you see a connection there?
Absolutely. I mean, I think you must have had me on after they hired Patrick Graham, and we might have talked about James Bradbury. I can't recall, but I mean, it definitely makes sense. They had James Bradbury, one thing I'll say, especially cornerback, you can get some kind of unique personalities. He's as low maintenance as a guy as you can have, like great in the locker room, just shows up, plays, he's super durable. So, like, all of that stuff, Patrick Graham, I'm sure, will go to bat for him with the people in the Raiders organization that are going to ultimately make the decision. The only thing that, which is ironic, though, he had such a good year. And Patrick Graham's system, Patrick Graham came from that Brian Flores / Bill Belichick tree where they want to play a ton of man coverage. And that's really what the Giants want to play here, too, with Wink Martindale. And part of the reason why they really didn't want to extend James Bradbury or push him down the road, he's not a great fit in that. I mean, he's long, so that lends itself to being like a press man corner. But he's definitely a better zone guy. I mean, he was never a burner, and he's getting older now. So I don't know. If Pat Graham wants to go back to, like, sort of his DNA, which was, press man coverage, a lot of cover zero, all that stuff, I don't think Bradbury would be an ideal fit. But Patrick Graham showed in the 2 years in New York that they didn't have good enough corners at the other spot, or other parts of the defense are weak, so they played more of a zone and thrived in that. So I think it really depends on what the Raiders are planning to run. But I think Bradbury's best suited in like a cover two, cover three type defense where his instincts, his ball skills, that kind of rise to the top. He's not a guy who, I know Tyreek Hill's not in your division anymore, but like, he's not going to match up and run with Tyreek Hill for four quarters. That's not his game, never has been. So the Raiders make a lot of sense in terms of him and Patrick Graham having a great relationship, but scheme-wise, I'd be curious to see if they are as interested as people might think, just because I'm not sure what Patrick's going to run in Vegas.
We've been having this discussion here because the Raiders right now, about $5 million under the cap, it would be difficult to sign James Bradbury at this moment. But in a few weeks, June 2nd, $20 million comes off their salary cap books with Corey Littleton and Carl Nassib's contracts officially coming off the books. Knowing James Bradbury and maybe, talking to the agent in the past, do you think that he would be open to maybe having to wait a little bit for the Raiders to be able to be a serious player financially for him, but it would necessitate waiting until June to do it?
That's an interesting question, because certainly a lot of Raiders fans in the mentions, I've become aware of that June 1st, kind of windfall right. They're going to fall into. I'll put it this way. I mean, if the market is super strong out of the gates and the Eagles are going to say, here's 1 year, $10 million, and the Chiefs are going to say, well, here's 1 year, $12 million, whatever, making up figures, then yeah, you're probably not going to wait around. But if it's a little lukewarm, again, you do have that Patrick Graham card to play. Obviously, there's no games being played between now and June 1st. I could definitely see him waiting, because I think, again, he kind of got burned by this process by the fact that the Giants didn't cut him in March. There isn't a lot of money. I don't think there is going to be a crazy bidding war. I think you have a handful of teams that are interested and trying to get him for as cheap as possible. So I think he's going to take his time and really try and find the right fit. So I don't know if that necessarily would take 3 weeks, but if he knows the Raiders are out there, I mean, the Raiders have to obviously show some serious interest. Like, listen, if you wait that long, we'll make it worth your while. And if he doesn't get blown away in the interim, I would think that certainly would be on the table. Because again, he doesn't really care what the rush to get the OTAs. I mean, he's a veteran. He'll show up in mandatory minicamp somewhere. So that's still a couple, it's a month away, I would think, most places. So Yeah, I don't think he'll be in a rush, and I think if he's interested in the Raiders, they're interested in him, I could easily see him waiting and just, you know, want that June 2nd, you know, 1201, you know, sign for a nice contract once they have some cap space.
We're talking to Dan Dugan. He covers the New York Giants for The Athletic. Obviously, James Bradberry officially cut. Today was a move that was imminent, and everyone can pretty much see coming. It became official today, and now James Bradberry is a free agent, able to market himself to 31 other teams. Dan's been all over it. Dan, you mentioned Patrick Graham. You mentioned the connection to James Bradberry. I think Raider fans are anxious to see what they have in their new defensive coordinator. OTAs are happening right now. There's going to be a mini camp, and then obviously at training camp, Raider fans will start to get a glimpse of what they can expect from Patrick Graham. But you've covered him for the last couple of years. What are the Raiders getting in Patrick Graham, the new defensive coordinator?
You're getting a really smart guy. I mean, kind of goes without saying when you're talking about a Yale grad, but then also a Yale grad who, you know, learned under Bill Belichick. I mean, certainly a highly intelligent football IQ and just, you know, just smart guy. Like I was saying, it's funny, he was adaptable, which I think is a strong suit as a coordinator, but I never think we fully got to see what he really wanted to run as a defensive coordinator because they just didn't have the personnel. Like I said, that first year where they had a really good defense and didn't have a very good team, but I think they're like 10th in scoring defense, which with the holes they had to cover was very impressive. I mean, their cornerback two spot was a mess. That's really why they couldn't play the man. It wasn't even so much Bradberry, but I think the zone just suited him better. So I don't know. Like, I think it'd be interesting to see what they play. Like, do they go back to the, like I was saying earlier, the cover one, a lot of that stuff, or does he say, like, I'm going to just mix things up? Because that's one thing he was really good at, especially in 2020. Like, last year was just kind of a mess, and then once Daniel Jones got hurt, the defense, it was just hopeless. I mean, they would force a three and out, and before they could sit on the bench, they'd be right back in there because the offense would have a turnover on the first snap. It was awful to watch. But in that 2020 year, anybody who wants to see, like, the height of a Patrick Graham defense, go look up the game at Seattle, like, midway through the season. Colt McCoy has to start quarterback for the Giants. So, I mean, it was not ever going to be an offensive firework. And the Giants went up to Seattle and won that game. And they had Russell Wilson to, like, kind of steal that quarterback, like, seeing ghosts. Like, he didn't know what he was looking at. Guys were blitzing on delayed blitzes and stunts and all sorts of stuff. I mean, he is really good at drawing up game plans. And again, he never had great personnel here, so I think the Raiders' personnel is going to be better. And if you get James Bradberry, even better. I'd be interested to see what he does with a lot of talent because he's been a coordinator now for 3 years. The Dolphins had a horrible roster. The Giants didn't have a very good roster since 2 years here. So I'd be interested to see when he has a little more to work with, especially the pass rushers the Raiders have, which certainly was never a strength during his time with the Giants. So. But yeah, I think you're getting a smart guy, a guy who's very creative. Players are going to like him. I mean, I think the Giants want to keep him. They're not happy that they lost him. There's a lot of kind of water under that bridge why he wanted to leave. And so I think that's to the Raiders' benefit.
Last question for you, Dan. The Giants obviously are a proud franchise. They've kind of fallen on hard times these last few years, and worse, they just haven't really been that interesting. And that's like the double whammy, being not good and not interesting, especially with the stage that they have in New York. That's not a good place to be. Are you starting to see any signs that the Giants are getting away from those type of years and that there's some future ahead of them, a bright future ahead of them?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously I'm living it. I would argue that it was pretty eventful last year. The end of the Joe Judge era got pretty wacky.
Yes.
So they were entertaining and not in the good ways. But listen, they're in the honeymoon phase here. You know, Joe Shane, Brian Daboll, you know, everyone's undefeated at this point in their tenure. But I will definitely say I'm a little jaded because I've been on the beat 7 years. And this is my fourth different head coach and my third different GM. So they kind of have to show me before I really believe it. And I think they're taking the right approach. And talking more from Shane's perspective here, where you got to have a long-term view on this. It's not a quick fix. They've been burned trying to do quick fixes here in the past. At the same time, it's probably going to make some pretty ugly football this fall. And it's all about 2023, 2024, and really getting like the health of the franchise head in the right direction. Like a James Bradberry type move, this is going to hurt the New York Giants in this fall. There's no doubt about that. But they felt like if they kick the can down the road, then are they really helping themselves down the road and they're going to want to spend that on a younger player or a player that fits their scheme better, whatever it may be. So I think they have the right approach. And we've seen that, you know, teams certainly can rebuild in this league and you certainly have to give them a chance to kind of let their process play out. But like I said, I think there's optimism that they finally maybe have the right guys in these seats, but I've kind of felt and sensed that optimism before, so I'm going to be a little guarded. And again, I think it'll be, you know, maybe one step back before they can take two steps forward, because I think they understand this is a rebuild and it's going to be a process. And I think this, the first step is, you know, kind of usually the hardest. So this fall could be a little tough to watch at times, I would imagine.
All right. Well, here's hoping for better days for the Giants. And I know covering a bad team is not very fun at all. But here's hoping that you have some better teams to write about in the future. Dan Dugan, thank you so much for spending some time with us in the huddle. Truly appreciate it, and truly appreciate your insight on James Bradberry. Thank you, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. Thanks.
You got it. That was Dan Dugan from The Athletic, covers the New York Giants. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 a.m. on a Monday.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignor. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignor on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Our thanks again to Dan Dugan from The Athletic, covers the New York Giants. Had some interesting things to say, not just about James Bradberry, but Patrick Graham. Very interesting to hear. I know the Giants did not want him to leave whatsoever, but the water under the bridge raised some eyebrows on what went down there. But also, hey, if you're Patrick Graham, and make no mistake, Patrick Graham is going to be an NFL head coach sooner rather than later. I just feel like he probably sized up the situation once he was able to leave and had the freedom to leave. Because remember, he was under contract as a defensive coordinator for the Giants. But once he started interviewing for other jobs and they allowed that, you know, they gave him the permission, blah, 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 it opened up some doors for him to look at a lateral move, not just becoming a head coach. If you're looking at the situation here with Las Vegas and the Raiders, it might just be a way better situation than the Giants. This could give him the better launching pad to where he's eventually going to go, and that is to become a head coach. And I'd like to see, and I'm really curious to see, now with a pass rush. We've talked about Max Crosby and Chandler Jones, some of the young defensive players that they've put together here in Las Vegas, what he's going to be able to do with it, because I think he is one of those difference maker type coaches. Dan Dugan brought it up. The New York Giants were not very good a couple of years ago. I think they went to Seattle and really turned the lights down on Russell Wilson. That's no easy task to do, and yet the Giants were able to do it mostly because Patrick Graham was pulling the right strings. We're going to go out to the Realty One listener line. Sean is in Baltimore. How you doing, Sean?
Hey, how you doing, Vinny? I just got a question, man. So I understand that you know, we want to bring in Bradberry, but to me, I think we have a lockdown corner already on the team. It's just if we move him, it's like opening up another hole. I would give Nate Hobbs a chance to roll on that outside, because in Illinois, he used to play on the outside all the time.
Yep, that was the spot, yep.
Right, and Trayvon Mullins, dude, he can't stay healthy. So why not give the young boy a shot to run on the outside?
Here's my thing, and I think it's a great point, and you know, I'm curious to see if that's even in the thought process for the Raiders, because Nate Hobbs is really good, and you would think that maybe that would be an avenue that they took. But let me ask you this: is Sean still on? Here's the question that I keep coming back to, Sean, and I'll flip it to you. Slot cornerback has become such an important position and such a difficult position to play. Remember, you're seeing the game from a totally different vantage point. You have to stop the run. You have to be willing to stop the run. You're going to get hit by guards that are coming across your face, trying to knock you into tomorrow to create, you know, running lanes. And the Raiders found a gem at slot cornerback in Nate Hobbs. So that would be my concern, would be, okay, I think he could go play the perimeter, but what hole are you opening up at slot cornerback?
And that, you know what, Vinny, you're so right. You're so right about that. I mean, I was thinking, and you're right, and I was trying to think, like, who on the team that can roll in that slot? And we haven't found him before Nate Hobbs.
So it's been years. Right about that. It's been years.
Right. So if we do get – how I'm looking at it is, I hope we do get Bradberry, but I just know Mullins is gone. I mean, this is last year, right, on his contract, and he can't stay healthy. So, but I don't want to hold Nate Hobbs back when he could be our next lockdown corner. He could be our next, like, he could be like, was it Osama? He could be like him. I may have said his name wrong.
Yeah, but no, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he could be like 90, and I don't want to stop his growth because he's inside when he could be on the outside on number one receivers our entire time.
Right. So, it's an interesting question because, you know, I'm sure when Nate Hobbs got drafted, he probably wasn't necessarily thinking about slot corner, but he did such a good job at slot corner and really, honestly, locked down that position at one of the highest levels in the NFL. You go look at what, you know, slot cornerbacks in the NFL, and Nate Hobbs is going to be right there at the top among them, and he's a rookie. So it's one of those cases where he did such a good job at a difficult position and in a position that has been very difficult for the Raiders to find an answer to that he may have locked himself in that position, even though he might very well be able to go out to the perimeter and play that spot as well. So, but it raises an interesting question. I think my gut, my instincts tells me that the Raiders like Nate Hobbs right where he is, but you can't rule anything out. However, if they go sign James Bradberry, if that comes to fruition, it would hard to think that Nate Hobbs is going anywhere else but slot cornerback, because then you have Trayvon Mullen, you have James Bradberry, you have Rock Ya-Sin, you have Anthony Averett, you have Darius Phillips. That is, and if that were to happen, when you start looking at that Raider cornerback room, Nate Hobbs, Anthony Averett, Rock Ya-Sin, James Bradberry, Trayvon Mullen, Anthony Averett, that's a pretty deep group right there. And we all know how difficult, first of all, injuries, how difficult it is. You need bodies. You need to match up. I always feel like build from a strength, or make a strength even stronger. And I think that's what the Raiders would be able to do by bringing in a guy like Bradberry, because again, you don't know what's lurking right around the corner in terms of injuries. We saw that with Trayvon Mullen last year. He's a guy that basically was on the field consistently his first 2 years. Yeah, there were some, where he kind of got knocked out of a game here or there, but he wasn't missing significant time up until last year. But you never know now with that foot or just the volatility of that position. Hey, I want to say thanks to Adam Rank from the NFL Network. Always a pleasure to talk to Adam. Always has a unique spin on things. Want to say thanks to Dan Dugan from The Athletic, covering the Giants and shedding some light on James Bradberry and Patrick Graham. Say thanks to Damon Cotton, our great producer, all the callers, all our listeners. Thank you so much. We appreciate the support. We're back at it tomorrow, 4 to 6 p.m. in the huddle, brought to you by Tequila and Bajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 a.m. Talk to you tomorrow. Hey guys, it's your boy Vinny B from Raider Nation Radio in the huddle. Guys, I've been talking for months now about TAT, an affordable quality CBD cigarette. Well, good news, all TAT products are now available at all Speedy Marts across Las Vegas. That's right, TAT products, all of them, are now available at all Speedy Marts across Las Vegas.